Good evening! We don't know if this is the evening or the morning or when you're listening to this, but we interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, or unscheduled programming, I guess, just dropping in on a Wednesday to give you some unexpected content. We spent the month talking about dark shit, and it felt like the move to pop in here and address the fact whether or not we think we're all doomed.
Absolutely. It's like that last day of Young Life camp after they've made you feel terrible about yourself. And then in the morning, they tell you about the redemption of Jesus. We're not here to tell you about that, but we would like to.
God, things got very dark.
If you've been to Young Life camp, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But
that's fair. That's a really accurate description.
Thank you. In that way, after saying so many negative things about humanity and ourselves, we just thought that it would be good to, like, let's pull up by our bootstraps a little. Like, let's talk about how maybe we're not so terrible, right?
Right. And I don't know, are we all doomed? Well, we talked about some dark shit and would like to maybe offer perhaps a few caveats to some of the things we already threw at you about us being terrible as people. So Jamie talked to us this month about how we're sexually attracted to just like shitty people and how there's some data with that. One thing, you know, perhaps relevant and worth mentioning is that that was based on European American samples really only and might not be generalized to other cultures. So maybe it's just like we being the problem, but not all of humanity. So that's a thing. In fact, there's also a study out that found that among Asian Americans, it was those men and women with more pro-social traits who were more successful at speed dating. So,
okay.
Listen. Some caveats to the data, but also, you know, then again, there's a lot more depressing research that, you know, we can't tell you about or fit into everything. But, you know, studies showing that perhaps we're more motivated by envy than admiration.
Whoops.
Perhaps the shocking prevalence of lying, a habit we start at age 2, and the manipulativeness of babies, the fake crying. It's real. But
the
here
fake
is
crying is uncomfortable.
Don't get too down on it, though, because here's the thing. These findings and many, many more say nothing about the success of some of our heroes, heroines, and saints who have overcome perhaps the shittier instincts we might possess as humans. In fact, it's arguable by acknowledging and understanding our shortcomings that we can more successfully overcome them, which I think we tried to talk about this month, where we dug into, hey, what are the benefits of maybe this thing that seems really shitty? And I feel like at least for all of them, we felt like there were benefits in the fact that just talking about them maybe gave us a better propensity to 100%. Look out for them.
And some of them didn't have any silver lining and they were just kind of like a leftover evolutionary thing that now kind of sucks and doesn't serve us. But there is always, and this was the point of Spooktober this year, is like by naming something that we do, we're able to start to get in front of it, hopefully.
We hope. But because, I don't know, the world is a haunted house and we wanted to give ourselves some things to maybe feel a little bit better about, because yeah, there's maybe some stuff that's intrinsically terrible about us that we've maybe tried to open our own eyes to a little bit more this month. There's peaking. Also some stuff that's like pretty good about humanity.
Just naturally, naturally better about us than maybe what we had presented previously.
Right. So a great example, I'd love to hit you with some of these. Kids as young as 2 are surprisingly selfless.
And I have seen this in children.
Right. I know. And we tend to think of like toddlers maybe as like selfish creatures a little bit.
Yeah. Terrible twos and whatnot.
Actually, right. It seems that even very young children are more pro-social than we give them credit for. And there was a study where they took pairs of 2-year-olds and they were given a set of marbles that made a nice sound when put into a box, which I do love the sound of marbles rolling into a box.
We all know what it sounds like.
Right. And children that age are not exactly renowned for sharing, yet the team of researchers found that about half the time the kids divided up the marbles fairly.
Amazing.
And only in 19% of trials did one child selfishly take all the toys for themselves.
So sometimes there was one asshole child. But
listen, we can't save them all.
But it's not just toddlers in that. So we're all predisposed to help others, according to some research. So even in the presence of strangers who we may never see again, we will regularly act for the benefit of the group and desire to punish those who don't act for the benefit of the group, even if it comes at our own personal expense. And sometimes this behavior is called strong reciprocity. And I think I feel this in the world. I think I've thought of it kind of as a negative thing almost, like that I don't necessarily like to go like against the grain socially. But I think it does come down to like pro-social behavior and having kind of a constant desire for harmony in any situation that I'm in. Like I don't desire conflict.
No, you don't? Oh, that's good. I like that.
It's good. It's good. But this is related to why people will even sometimes forego like some of their own winnings to punish people who act unfairly. And apparently this pro-social behavior could even account for like why we enjoy getting in line. Like lining up for things feels...
And call out the assholes who are trying to cut?
Absolutely.
Feels good. I see you skipping the queue, motherfucker. Okay.
You know, feels good.
Listen, and also our personalities have light dimensions, okay? What I mean by this is they just haven't been studied perhaps as much as the dark ones, okay? Like that's worth pointing out.
Yeah, we talk dark triad.
We're digging into crappy things.
Exactly. Right?
Because there are fucking thousands of papers out here about the so-called dark triad of traits where we talked about, you know, narcissism and psychopathy and Machiavellianism. Mm-hmm. And those are all associated with undesirable behaviors like egotism, like callousness, manipulation.
Generally fucking people over.
Yeah, the bad shit. But this focuses on the undesirable side of our personalities and perhaps misrepresents the full capacities of humanity, okay? Because earlier in time, there has also been folks who've published a new scale to measure what they call the light triad. So here's what I mean when I say our personalities maybe have some light
dimensions. Do I have a light triad? I know I have a semi-dark triad, go on.
Listen. Well, the things that make up the light triad, so humanism, right? And then Kantianism, which is just like treating people not as a means to an end, but as an end itself.
Oh,
and
okay.
My favorite one, because I feel like we were trying to have this when we were asking, like, is this terrible? Is there anything good to this? An actual just faith in humanity.
I don't know if I possess that.
Well, I feel like I have more of it than you. I'll own that. But listen, this work's exploratory and it's still in its early days, but folks found that high scores on the light triad traits were associated with a greater quality of life. Jot that shit down. And overall, people generally scored higher on the light triad than on the dark triad.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
Right. More people are scoring for like humanism and faith in humanity and trying to treat people well than are scoring as like narcissists. Yeah, that's good.
This is very, very good. And then when it comes to the environment, children actually have a profound sense of right and wrong. I have some vague memories of like developing a sense of right and wrong, starting to feel guilt, you know. But this is according to a 2011 study in which children were presented with various scenarios where a person displayed bad manners or performed some moral transgression, such as stealing or maybe like did something bad to the environment, like harmed a tree. And what the kids did was they rated the harm to the environment as worse than the bad manners. And they overwhelmingly gave biocentric rather than anthropocentric explanations for their ratings. So basically what that means is like they believed that the environment per se, just like the environment by itself, is worthy of respect. Not just because it provides sustenance to humans, but just because it is. And that to me feels kind of like treating other people well just for the sake of treating other people well. What was that? Kantianism that you touched on.
Yeah. That's the treating people, again, as not as a means to an end, just as an end, yes, as it should be.
And so children are also kind of having this experience with the environment where they are reacting to people who are harming a tree or maybe littering or something, and reacting to those offenses as though they are much worse than bad manners. And I appreciate that.
I fucking appreciate that. You know what else I fucking appreciate? We place more value on someone else's physical suffering than our own. Mm. What?
Oh, okay. I guess if I think about myself, I don't know. I like to think that I do. So go on.
Okay. Well, when we think about the Milgram experiment, right, which we touched on a little bit during Spooktober, in this experiment, participants were convinced by an authority figure to administer electric shocks to another person. But not only has the classic interpretation of these studies been questioned, other work has also found that we're really not that keen for another person to experience physical suffering. There was a 2014 study where researchers gave participants cash rewards for electric shocks, ooh, with the opportunity to increase the intensity of the shock for extra money. What's the twist to this shit? Sometimes the participants themselves received the shock, but in other cases, a stranger in another room was the victim. And surprisingly, the team of researchers working on this one found that people were much more willing to give themselves a larger shock for extra money. Wow. And they needed twice the cash incentive to raise the pain level for the stranger.
Wow. I mean, it would feel really horrible to be paid to shock someone else.
I'm stressed about that. I would also feel more comfortable like inflicting pain on myself for money. Like, sure. Okay.
100%. Because there's like fairness. It feels fair or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. But then do you remember the movie that I did not enjoy, but all six of my grandparents loved, Pay It Forward.
Isn't Haley Joel Osment in that?
He is indeed. So
perfect.
Pay It Forward is obviously a very annoying movie from the early 2000s. Maybe you loved it. That's fine. But it turns out that when we are nice to people, they really do pass on the goodwill to others. And researchers...
paying it forward is a real thing.
It is a real thing. And it's maybe niceness is contagious, kind of like how anger is contagious, we talked about earlier in the season.
Sure.
But researchers asked a small group of employees to perform simple acts of kindness to their coworkers for 4 weeks. That's a whole month. Can they run this at my workplace? Anyway.
I would love it. I love this. Okay.
By the end of the study period, levels of morale and happiness increased amongst those who had been on the receiving end of those acts, of course. But importantly, these receivers also reported that they themselves had begun engaging in more positive behaviors toward others. And they said, our study suggests that although everyday pro-social acts may be small, they are not insignificant. And they concluded that the benefits of pro-sociality do in fact multiply. And so it is actually contagious and favors not only those who give, but also those who receive and even people who just observe. So if you like see someone do something nice for someone else,
that's
you're
true.
More
it does
likely,
make me feel good.
Mm-hmm, and you're more likely later that day to like do another thing for someone. And so as much as I hate that movie, I guess it's a cool concept that happens.
I mean, sure.
It's fine. Helen Hunt. Yeah.
I love Helen Hunt. Speaking of guilty pleasures, looking at you, Helen Hunt, one of our guiltiest pleasures may be motivated by feelings of empathy and compassion as people. Oh, okay. Here's the thing. The rise of reality TV, shout out to your housewives, might seem like a sure sign of the worst excess of humanity. And like, yeah, we talk a lot of shit about reality TV as someone over here watching the fucking Bachelor, L'Chaim.
I'm constantly watching the Housewives. Potomac is off the charts right now. Go ahead.
Listen, the fact that we spend our free time watching strangers' relationships fall apart or people having their dreams crushed in front of an audience looking at you, American Idol auditions, doesn't exactly inspire confidence in people, right? Like that we're like, that's like feels like tabloid shit. Like, is that gross
tearing people
to be
down.
Participating in? Well, here's the fucking thing. Here's a silver lining. Here's some light shit, okay? According to a 2016 study, our drive to watch reality TV might have altogether more positive origins because researchers gauged participants' opinions on reality shows and asked how much they'd like to participate in these shows or what, you know, they'd think if a family member wanted to be a part of mm-hmm. them. And the more that people enjoyed watching the shows, the happier they said they would be for themselves or a loved one to participate.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And the authors of this study who are, you know, digging into this say that the findings suggest people watch reality TV because they empathize with the contestants mm-hmm. or like the cast or whatever the fuck, mm-hmm. not because they like seeing other people being humiliated, even though maybe sometimes we've questioned that.
Right.
Otherwise, they probably would be advising against, you know, themselves or someone they cared about being a part of the show, right?
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps the conclusion should be taken, you know, maybe with a pinch of salt here. But at the very least, this research perhaps implies that our motivations might not always be as unpleasant as we instinctively believe. Because I think we look at reality TV and go, like, what happened to us? We're terrible.
And maybe that actually speaks to some of, like, the popularity of The Voice over American Idol at this point.
Because The Voice is nice.
The format is, like, heartwarming. Yeah.
It is. Oh, I love The Voice. Go on.
And then I'd like to mention this, and if my girlfriend is listening, I would like to make sure that she's paying extra close attention to this.
Oh, so, shout out. Mm.
Everyone is maybe sometimes a little agitated if they're hungry, but...
Oh,
it turns out that even when we haven't eaten in a while, we actually remain pretty helpful and cooperative toward others.
Oh.
And this is according to a 2019 paper that found that hungry people were just as likely as those who had recently eaten to contribute money to a shared pot.
So maybe hangry isn't quite a real thing, is what you're saying.
Perhaps not. Or they, agreed to do other things for other people. What they expected of others and even of themselves was that they would be less cooperative when they're hungry. I think I think that about myself. Obviously, I think that about other people. Like, if I'm with a person who hasn't eaten in a while, I definitely feel like I sometimes pick up on a little tension. But according to this, we remain just as helpful. So maybe we're a little bristly. I don't know. But we'll, like, still give people money. Like, we'll still help someone. We'll agree to do stuff. So the authors of this study are saying that it's actually due to the myth of self-interest, which is the mistaken belief that we are all inherently selfish. I don't know if we know if that's mistaken or not, but I guess it's cool if it is a mistake.
I don't think we're inherently selfish. I think capitalism makes people selfish, and that's not inherent.
Oh, and it's the backdrop for our lives. Anyway, so
it's we live in a system that motivates selfishness.
Thank
it's
you.
Different.
You know what? You're right. And while a 2011 study famously found that judges make fewer favorable rulings as they get increasingly hungry, that finding has apparently been debunked. So no worries.
Not so much evidence for that anymore. Okay.
If you're in court with a judge who hasn't eaten. So I don't know. No hanger, I guess. That's cool.
Well, here's something, and I don't know if this makes us feel better or worse, but it is, I don't know, something worth noting that, okay, so yes, experiencing trauma is devastating and can have a lot of negative repercussions, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One of the things that perhaps psychologists swing a little bit more positive about it is that those of us who've suffered the most tend to be the folks who show the greatest compassion towards others.
It's not people a pay it forward negatively situation. Though.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's not like you suffered, so now you want to make someone else suffer.
Smack it forward.
That's not what's happening.
It's not.
Because people who've had more adverse experiences also tend to be more empathetic, according to research. And there are folks who've dug into this who have been, you know, through a great number of negative experiences, like disasters, bereavements, injuries. Those folks, through these studies, seem to display more empathy and are also more willing to give to charity. And that seems to be because they have a stronger belief in their ability to make a difference to others who are suffering, which I'm like, wow, because maybe you experienced something and understood that someone else, like, their actions helped you or had, like, a positive impact.
Exactly. Yes.
And so it's not to say that adversity is a positive thing, obviously, but it does suggest that out of darkness can come good things, okay?
Yeah, that it breeds understanding.
Absolutely.
Finally, many, quote, classic studies that seem to reveal the worst of human nature are being challenged. And so that's refreshing, a little breath of lightness here. So there are a handful of social psychology findings that are just kind of like a psych 101 deal. Like, you probably learned about it. We probably learned about it. It's very standard. And these things, more often than not, have told us something awful about the human condition. But the textbook account of these studies doesn't always stand up to scrutiny. So take the Stanford Prison Experiment, which...
And we talked about this on another episode where I was like, some of these findings aren't legit.
You did. You did. And we did talk about the Stanford Prison Experiment, like, in the way that the study kind of was reported. But then we also did talk about some of the arguments against, which we will continue to talk about in this moment. So in the Stanford Prison Experiment, volunteers were assigned the role of either prison guards or prisoners. And they each enacted those roles. And what played out was the guards becoming increasingly abusive to the prisoners and the prisoners feeling increasingly fearful and under the control of the guards, even though everyone was just a college student. So recently, psychologists have challenged this traditional account. So one analysis of recordings from the Stanford Prison Experiment suggests that the researchers took a much more active role in encouraging the guards to behave in a, like, quote, tough way than they had originally reported. So that kind of undermines the gloomier conclusion that we would normally draw from this experiment, which is that we're given these roles, we lean into them, and we love to assert power and control of over other people. And that has been, as mentioned at the beginning, like something that we all learn about. And it's something that I think about from time to time and that I have
accepted. That's like 101 shit that haunts you. Yeah.
Exactly. It's something that I've accepted as real, that like if you're in that role, like you're likely to act accordingly. But now we're finding that actually the people who executed this experiment were telling the guards to like be more aggressive and to like make the prisoners feel afraid. And
it wasn't innate. It wasn't inherent. They didn't just like jump in and instinctively want to act like that.
It was not. And that is so encouraging. So Stanford Prison Experiment, like not fully debunked, but like a little further explained in a way that makes us seem better as people. And there are other things like, for example, bystander effect that have been taught to us in a psych 101 way about kind of the negative nature of humanity that are also being challenged. And there's a bunch of discrepancies with the Kitty Genovese case, which is what's often used to talk about bystander effect and people just not helping other people because they think someone else
this
will.
Is the one where like she's being attacked and everybody, you know, allegedly hears and sees it, but nobody calls the cops because everybody thinks somebody else is, or like nobody goes to help her.
100%. And so apparently there are some things about the reporting of that case that are not correct. And so if you wanted to do any of your own research on that, give a little peek at Kitty Genovese. I don't know. It makes me feel better to wrap up Spooktober in this way. As I mentioned, like a Young Life camp where we instill this kind of nugget of hope at the end.
Got to do a little bit of hope. Things are so dark right now because like it is a real haunted house. But again, I think good things come from looking at the darkness, because maybe looking at the darkness actually makes us a little less doomed.
100%. Well, I hope that you've enjoyed this Spooktober series. Become aware of some parts of yourself. Gently examine them, but also have hope. You know, we're trying to do that as well. And honestly, most of all, just like hold on to your hat during this upcoming full moon. But you'll hear more about that later.
You know? More on that later. You know what that means. Okay, we'll tell you about things. But as always, if you want to sound off on whether you feel like we're less doomed or maybe this whole thing sent you into a doom spiral the entire month, as always, you can let us know on the internet. You can find us via email at whyyourlikethispod@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram at whyyourlikethispod. And you can find us on Twitter at WAYLTTweets. And good night, good morning, good day. Here we go into November, but stay spooky, you know?
Yeah, stay the spookiest. We will. Goodbye.
Bye.